Hello, and welcome to AgTech Talk, Agribusiness Global's podcast exploring the latest tools, services, and tech innovations designed to move the crop input community forward. We talk with industry experts delivering solutions found on the field, on the computer, or in the air. If it's transforming agriculture, we'll talk about it here. I'm your host, Senior Editor Dan Jacobs. Today we're talking with Arthur Erickson, CEO and one of the original co-founders of Helio, which manufactures drones for the ag community. Thanks for being with us today, Arthur.
Well, my name is Arthur Erickson. I am the CEO and one of the original co-founders of the company. The company is called Helio. There you go. It's got a Y in it, but we're actually named after the Greek god of the sun, Helios. The reason we have that name is because once upon a time, our company first started off making a delivery drone. So we made a hardware platform and software to control it to make the point A to point B deliveries of small parcel goods very streamlined. And so we envisioned Helios, the Greek god of the sun, delivers the sun across the sky every day. And so here are our drones delivering parcels across the sky every day. So that's where the name comes from. We did a drone delivery project in Costa Rica for about 8-9 months. Technically, we pulled it off. So we were actually doing drone deliveries beyond line of sight to people's backyards and driveways and stuff before Amazon and Google were actually doing it for real. In fact, they're still not really doing it. But it wasn't making us much money, simply put. And we didn't like that there was so much red tape. Even though we were in Costa Rica, which was a lot more of a lax environment, we wanted to get directly to the customers with our technology. So we pivoted fully to agriculture. By like early 2017, we were just doing ag, and that's what we do now to this day. So nowadays, what Helio does is we design, manufacture, and then sell these crop treatment platforms, these crop spraying drones. It's not just liquid products that we can treat with our drones. It's also solid products. So that could be seeds or ant bait, for example. But basically anything you could think of in the ag or ag adjacent industries, which involves delivery of some sort of chemical or product to treat something.
You mentioned the regulatory issues that kind of, made at least the lack of line of sight, for delivery anyway, an issue. Is that not, at least in the U.S., is that a concern still, that you have problems with that kind of thing?
Well, it is interesting. It's a developing situation right now. Every day is a little bit different. And the FAA, of course, is a few steps behind the industry, as is typical for a regulatory body. It's easier than delivery because in the ag industry, you're not flying over populated cities. So the FAA is a lot more lenient about it and more free-flowing with the exemptions, the waivers you need to operate. If you basically show, which is the case, that you're flying over corn, 1,000 acres of corn with not a single human soul besides the operator in sight for miles, they're a lot more amenable to you flying drones with larger payloads, more quote-unquote dangerous payloads, i.e. chemicals and whatnot. So there's a lot of gray areas, but it's workable right now. The regulations are certainly a lot easier than cargo or human transport over cities.
Let's talk a little bit about just the concept of drones in general. I mean, we've seen, I've been at this magazine for many years now, and drones have been talked about, I think, just about from the day one I got here. But, and they're being used in places, but, the adoption rate, I mean, how would you characterize the adoption rate? Is it increasing? Are we kind of plateaued? Are we waiting? What are we waiting for it to become more widely accepted, I guess, is where I'm ultimately going.
We're talking about just drones in general here, or agricultural drones?
Well, agricultural drones, I guess.
Drones in general, I was going to say, I think they are very ubiquitous at this point. Agricultural drones, there has been a lot of hesitation by the wider market in terms of the size that they can carry, because most farmers, you have to realize, of course, are coming from perspective of like a 300 or 400 or 500 gallon giant tractor. So they're used to those very large volumes. And so when they hear that your drone can only carry like 15 or 20 gallons, they're like, okay, cool, but that doesn't seem like enough. Now, what the farmers aren't really realizing, it's an education problem. What they're not realizing is that you get away with spraying a lot less volume per acre using the drones, because the way the physics works out on the drones is you're spraying a much finer more penetrative mist, right, versus what you'd spray out of a tractor. And because you have the downwash from the propeller wind, the wind from the propeller downwash pushing the droplets down into the crop, you get a lot more efficacy out of the applications. So you can get away, you can basically do what you do with a 300-gallon tractor with a 20-gallon drone, which is what we have today. Farmers just don't know that. Not all of them know that. So it is just a knowledge problem. So in a lot of ways, Helios still, and the industry still, is in the phase where we're educating and informing the customer base. Because, yeah, it's not entirely caught on yet. Now, don't get me wrong, there is incredible demand, and there are a lot of people ahead of the curve here, a lot of farmers and ag tech service providers who have already understood this. And so drones are flying off the shelves. But to hit that, you know, middle of the bell curve, we're just probably going to need to continue to educate the market for a year or two more.
Okay. So besides using smaller amounts of chemicals, and there are, lots of people that think that's a good idea. What are the advantages of having a drone versus, having that 300, 400, 500 gallon device?
So cost is a big one. I'll give you some quick numbers. Don't want to get too into the weeds here, but a new high clearance sprayer from John Deere, Case IH, will probably run you at least $300,000, if not $450,000 for a new or slightly used one. Now, with that piece of equipment, you could probably spray about 100 acres per hour on a given decent type of field with decent terrain. Now, with two of our drones, you could spray the same amount. So two of our largest drones that we offer right now, which is called the AG272, you could cover 100 acres per hour, and that would only run you about $150,000. So you're already half the price of those tractors from the get-go, but you're about 3 to 4 times cheaper as well from an operating cost perspective. So per hour or per acre that you're operating with our drones, you're looking at, I'd say 30 to 40% of the cost of what you'd pay with a tractor. So with the tractor, you got the diesel, you got the maintenance, the cost of ownership of such an expensive piece of equipment, et cetera. So much cheaper, these drones. They're also much more flexible in terms of where and how you can deploy them. So a tractor, as you know, is a terrestrial device. If the fields are muddy, if the fields have a lot of grade to them, if they're very slopy, then it's very difficult to get that tractor in and out of that field conveniently. The drones obviously don't have any issue with that. They fly in three dimensions, so they can just fly over any type of field. It's very difficult as well to do effective or practical spot spraying with tractors. So yes, John Deere has newer tractors that will turn nozzles on and off, but that still means that you're going over the entire field in a lawnmower pattern and just selectively turning nozzles on and off. So that's still very time inefficient. Now with the drones, you could just highlight, let's call it 100 areas in a 1,000-acre field. Each area is only 2 by 2 feet, and they can go ... spray all those areas without having to do this very inefficient lawnmower pattern across the entire field. So to summarize all that, I know it's kind of rambling. They're cheaper both initially and from an operating perspective. They're more flexible in terms of when and how you can operate them in terms of terrain and weather conditions, and they're also more precise. So you can unlock further cost savings by deploying them just for problem areas, whereas you can't do that with a traditional piece of tractor equipment.
Are there challenges like on a windy day? Is it going to be a problem, or can these handle, I'm not saying suggesting gale force winds or anything, but, get a nice breeze out there. Is that going to be a problem?
No. These drones are much bigger than a lot of people are imagining. So you're probably thinking of a camera drone, which is only 2 or 3 pounds. These things are 400 pounds when they're fully loaded flying in the air. So they're very stable, very difficult to move from the wind. So they can handle 25, 30 miles per hour wind, no problem. Now, there's a caveat. You wouldn't spray in too much wind. And that's just like a typical ag thing, right? You wouldn't spray in more than 12, 15 mile per hour wind, depending on the product you're spraying with. So there is that. The drone's not the issue. It's the spray.
You mentioned obviously, you're not spraying the entire field. You're spraying, specific spots where, there's an issue. I guess the question is, how are they finding out where that issue is? Is it, they're using satellite data? Is there something actually on the drone itself that can sort of discern where the weeds or the pests or whatever it is they're spraying for are?
All of the above. So there are plenty of people that do use satellite imagery. These days, satellites are so advanced. And of course, like the military has even better ones. But even civilians have access to really good resolution satellite imagery, which can pinpoint the browner areas or the areas that you can clearly see blight, fungus, or something like that. So yes, a lot of customers pull that in. You can also have a camera mounted on the spray drone itself. You could do a scanning pass first with the drone without any payload in it, identify those areas, and then go spray them. You can also use another dedicated scout drone or a dedicated camera drone to go scout in conjunction. So while you're spraying one field, your camera drone could be scouting another field, and so on and so forth. It's a very flexible back-end data structure that we have in our software, so you can pretty much pull in these prescriptions from anywhere you have them.
How customizable is the let me rephrase that. Who's operating this? Is it somebody has to be trained on how to use this? Is it relatively autonomous? I mean, how are we saving labor doing this? You know, what's the issue with that?
Yeah, specifically my company Helio, since day one, back 2015 when we started, we were very much focused on making this as hands-free as possible because humans are great, but they're flawed, right? So we want to take out as much human error as possible from the process flow. So our drones specifically are very automated. You are literally outlining an area. We have a Google Maps type of interface. It's actually literally linked to Google Maps. So you'll see the area you're trying to treat. You'll outline the boundaries, which is a similar process flow for a bunch of like tractors these days. And then you'll just say, hey, I want 2 gallon per acre dosage. I want to fly at, you know, this speed. You're assigning some top level parameters, sending it to the drone, click and go, and that's it. So you're giving the drone instructions. You're not manually controlling the drone in any sort of way. Drone will go spray it once it's out of payload or once it finishes its given polygon, it'll come back home automatically land. And then, yes, you are manually, as the operator or an assistant of yours, or a colleague, is going to go and swap batteries and swap the payload, but they're not going to manually fly the drone again. They're just going to click take off again.
I think I remember reading somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, that the battery lasts about 15 minutes or so. Is that right?
That's about right. Yeah, it's 12 to 15 minutes, depending on weather conditions and payload. It's essentially tied to the payload. And what I mean by that is you'll dump one battery cycle in the time you dump one payload cycle. So you're coming back to refill payload anyway. At that time, you just swap the batteries as well.
So in terms of timing, and again, you said a sprayer might, you know, cover the entire field, even if it's turning on and off, it's got to cover the entire field, whereas the drone can pinpoint those spots and just cover that. In terms of comparatively, like, you know, and whether it's a tractor covering the entire field or the drone covering spots within the field, does it take roughly the same time? Is the drone quicker because it's only doing, you know, but still has to come back and go out again? I mean,
drones generally much quicker. It can fly. I mean, it's flying usually between points or 2 points to spray at about 30 miles per hour. So it's really zipping to all these different points. And especially when you're spot spraying, the largest drone we have, 18 gallons, that's usually more than enough because you're putting down a fraction of a gallon on each little individual spot that you're targeting. So usually with one of those full tank loads, you can go out and spray hundreds, if not like 1,000 different points, depending on how you optimize the mission.
Are these being used are they being purchased? Are they being rented? Do they go directly to the growers? Are people working through retailers and the retailers are sort of, taking care of that for the growers? I mean, how does the process work?
This is another all of the above type of situation. We have, I'll tell you, the majority of it looks like this. About half the customers are growers themselves who just directly bought the drone for their own land. So usually they're larger farmers, let's say between 2 to 10,000 acres, and they have been spending enough money on either third-party spray services or running their tractors that they feel that this drone purchase is justified. And furthermore, they feel it's justified to have like their son or a ranch hand be the drone guy on their ranch or on their farm. So they typically buy 2, 3, 4 drones, dedicate them to their own land, and that's it. Then the other half of our customers are service providers. So they're buying the drones, going out and servicing multiple farmers for X amount of acres per year, per season. It's about split 50-50.
You mentioned education being one of the keys to getting growers or customers to use these. Are there some other challenges that you've just come across, or is it the old, I've done it this way for 30 years, so why do I need to change? I mean, what are you hearing about that?
There is a lot of skepticism around the capacity, like we already talked about. It really comes down to that. It's crazy because the thing is, once you show a farmer, you go out and do like a field day or a demonstration, maybe just do some burn down herbicide on a few strips of grass to demonstrate just how even and effective this is, even at low dosages, and, you know, 2 gallons per acre, even less than that sometimes. Once they see it, they're like, okay, I'm sold. So it's not usually a hard sell. They just, like, on paper, it sounds a little far-fetched to them. But once they're there and they're feeling it, seeing it in action, they're usually coming around pretty quickly.
I mean, I know drones are used all over the world. You mentioned, you know, the U.S. is a little slow, a little behind the scenes. But where are you? Where have you seen adoption? You know, growth. You know, which are your markets that you're really interested in?
Latin America is huge. It's a bit of a complicated subject. Latin America doesn't have the purchasing power that the U.S. has, of course, and other more developed Western nations. They have a strong need for the drones, though. Their infrastructure is very poor. Typically, they have farm lots that are, you know, 3 to 2 acres, even on average, and they're usually nestled on mountainsides or valleys. There's a lot of trees. There is a lot of power lines crisscrossing their areas. So they desperately need the drones, and it represents a leap for them. As in, you know, people always bring up the example, Africa didn't get landlines. They just went straight to cell phones. It's kind of the same way for Latin America. And I should mention Southeast Asia as well. They're not getting your John Deere tractors. They're not even getting spray helicopters. They're going straight from spraying by hand with a backpack to drones. And yeah, that's an interesting market. I think what we need to figure out as an industry is just how to service it better and how to deal with the economics, because they're certainly different than here in the States. People are just looking for very, very, very cheap options, very cheap hardware. And there's not a lot of expertise around there to support the drones once you've sold them. So that is, I think for that market to be tackled properly, our company or other companies in this space need to actually set up a stronghold there, so to speak, and have a service center that can maintain these drones for the customer base.
I was going to ask, you know, there was something recently about the owner being able to repair, you know, devices, that kind of thing. You know, my Apple iPhone sitting next to me here is one of those things that, I certainly can't do it, but even if I wanted to, you know, they make it in such a way that it's really, really hard to open up and for me to get into it and to play with, to fix something. I mean, is that, you know, what you're talking about? Like, you know, if something goes wrong, if there's a tweak with the drone or, you know, one of the rotors, or, you know, I'm looking at the picture there, rotors like goes bad, you know, is that something they can fix on their own, or is that something they really need to talk to us, you know, the company for?
No, generally speaking, it's something they could fix on their own. And we are the opposite of Apple in that regard. We are very much a right to repair, right to upgrade type of company. So we're not saying that we're going to necessarily honor the warranty if you go in there and like hack everything up without talking to us. But yeah, we encourage you, because a lot of times it comes down to speed. Like, I need this drone back up today because I've got, you know, 2,000 more acres to spray and only a 2-week window to do it. So instead of like having them ship the drone back here or us even flying someone out there to repair a drone, it's usually just faster for that person right there to get on the phone with us if need be. And we walk them through maybe like an hour, 2 hour repair for even the most complicated stuff typically. And then they're back up in the air. So it's relatively easy to service. It depends. Like, you can really push them. So the harder you push them, they are very durable, but the more you're going to have to maintain them. And so to bring it back to like the Latin American market, those people run their equipment very hard. So it's challenging sometimes because they'll even drop it into like puddles. They'll drop chemicals on it sometimes just because it's a little bit more disorganized over there. And I've worked a lot down there for several years, so I kind of know how it goes. There's things you see down there in terms of wear and tear that you don't see up here. So that's why I'm saying that there might need to be like an additional layer of support down in those countries to make that market really stick.
You certainly mentioned, different solutions or different products can be delivered using a drone. I mean, are there any limitations that, you know, we can handle these things, but maybe not, you know, this? And is it, let's start with that question.
Applications like products specifically? Yeah. The drones are good for virtually everything and anything except for your heavy fertilizers. So your early or preseason fertilization that you're doing, the NPK stuff, it's too much weight per acre to make it efficient for drones at the moment. The drones aren't big enough for that. But besides that, the drones are an adequate replacement, if not an improvement on pretty much every other application, I would say.
And does it matter whether it's a row crop or a specialty crop? No.
We went into the ag industry years ago thinking that specialty crops would be the money maker, right? Because it's smaller acreage, higher value crops, but most of our customer base has actually been row crops. So 85-90% of our customers service row crops using our drones. There are specialty crop people, but I suppose just there's a fewer percentage of those farmers overall versus row crop farmers. So most of the people we end up talking to are just row crop farmers, but it works both ways.
Ian, you mentioned this. Right now, the drones aren't capable, you know, of really handling, or it's not efficient for them to handle, you know, for the fertilizer side. Where do you see this part of the industry, this segment of the industry, you know, this drone technology going, you know, 10 years from now? What are we going to be seeing?
Two main tenets: bigger and more automated. So I envision the drones essentially almost getting to the size of small helicopters. So we'll probably get up to 50 to 100 gallons of payload in the next few years, I would say, which that's a whole other thing, because you're getting into a lot of disadvantages of a helicopter at that point, because you have such a large, expensive piece of equipment that's difficult to transport, more difficult to maintain. But anyway, I think it's going to happen regardless. But that segues to the second point, which is further automation. So I had mentioned earlier that still the operator is there swapping battery, swapping payload, but we will soon, as an industry and as a company, get to the point where you're automatically charging and refilling between flights. So that's why, to bring it all home, I don't personally believe that you need huge, huge drones when you could have three or four of them in like the 20 to 40 gallon range that are all completely hands-off, autonomously treating your fields. Because then what if you're the operator, why do you care if it's one device or one device that's split into four devices technically flying out over the field if it's the same zero amount of work for you, right? So you bring the hive, so to speak, of drones out to the field, assign all the missions, and then just click go, and they're all going to go do their work. So that's what it's going to look like pretty soon here. Completely hands off, even for the in-between stuff.
So you could have a fleet of three, four, whatever is necessary for a given size.
Yeah, exactly.
Operation.
It's not like there is an upper limit. Like the farms are only so big, so you don't need a 10,000 gallon drone. There is an upper ceiling on what's actually effective here or practical. It's in the order of dozens or possibly low hundreds of gallons, not more than that.
Yeah. Okay. What are besides, I think we asked you this, but just to clarify, you mentioned the education being a challenge. Are there other challenges that you come across or objections from growers other than just the, you know, until they see it, you know, they don't know, or?
Yeah, the regulations is always like a big question mark. Of course they're understandably worried. It's just like, I don't understand, this is so new, like, well, what's the FAA gonna think if my neighbor, you know, tells on me or something, like, what's gonna happen, right? What licenses do I need, et cetera, et cetera. So we get those questions a lot, but we have been through the ringer. We've helped hundreds of people at this point get their licensing in place. So we're pretty well versed in it. We're not lawyers, of course. We do work with some lawyers, but long story short, it's a bit labyrinthian if you don't know, if you haven't looked at it, but we give you a checklist, for example, if you're a customer saying, here are like the 3 or 4 licenses you actually need, here's how to apply for them, and it becomes a fairly straightforward process.
You mentioned Latin America is a region, I guess, that is interested in and Southeast Asia, certainly is a growing region. Is it because those farms are smaller that maybe they're and these devices are cheaper than those big machines that maybe they're interested in this?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They're cheaper, and the terrain necessitates it. It's like they don't even have a choice in a lot of cases. It's either you're going out there and spraying it by hand, which is just dangerous and very inefficient, or you can't use any equipment. You can't use equipment like on these terrace rice paddies, on this coffee that's grown on the side of like a 45-degree slope. You just can't get a tractor out there. So you have to use drones or you're doing it by hand.
And I imagine, because you can operate several drones at a time, or at least a couple of drones at a time, and it's so automated, or at least a large part of it is automated, that it's a labor issue, right? I mean, that's one of the things we hear about constantly is, especially in rural areas and Southeast Asia, India, those kinds of things, where just people are moving to the cities, they're not staying on the farm like they used to.
Yeah, correct. There's fewer people willing to work on the farms. And so it also becomes a problem. Like, you don't want to have to invest so much money and time training someone how to use this extremely complicated piece of tractor equipment, right? Which has like all these knobs and tiles, I should say. And they've streamlined it a bit recently, but the drones are still like so much more intuitive to use because it's very simple point and click interface and just click take off and that's it. Versus like having you're having difficulty finding a farmhand. You finally find someone. You train them for about a week or so. They're still a little green around the gills. And then you just throw them on like you're a $1 million tractor and they run into a fence post or something. It's pretty devastating. So that's not like if you take someone, a relatively untrained person, and they crash a $15,000 drone, it's a lot different. And our drones only cost like a few hundred bucks to repair typically. So they're much more forgiving. They're easier to train up on. And so they're solving the labor issue in a lot of ways. You need fewer people to operate more of them. And they also need to be less trained. And they're less able to damage things.
I imagine also the, maybe I'm being oversimplifying or being stereotyped here, but younger folks are used to playing video games and they just view this as, obviously it's not a video game, but it's, I don't know if the interface is more like that. So they're comfortable, pushing buttons and levers or whatever it is that, maybe we should talk about that. Tell me about the interface. What is it people are looking at? Are they doing it on their phone? Are they doing it on a computer screen? How are they controlling these devices?
Technically, our software needs Windows 10 or 11 to operate. So you would have to use a tablet or a laptop or a computer that runs on Windows 10 or 11. So a lot of times we recommend the Microsoft Surface Pro as a good hybrid option. So it's a folding Microsoft tablet laptop thingy. Those are pretty good. So I mentioned this before, but the main page you're looking at, the planning page of our software is a Google Maps overlay. And then you're just drawing. So it's like Microsoft Paint, right? You're just like drawing a polygon over like your field and saying you close the loop. It defines that area. It's on the right side of the screen in the dropdown. You can say for this area, I want 2 gallons per acre. I want 15 foot altitude, 20 mile per hour speed. And then you give that to a drone. So the drones show up in the interface as different little like cards where you can select them and configure their settings. It is very much like a video game. I think you nailed it. And we all grew up. I'm 30 years old, so I grew up in the relative modern age here, and so did all my co-founders. So I think we took a lot of those lessons subconsciously from video gaming, PC gaming and stuff, and put that into our software. So definitely it feels like that, gamified a bit.
And do they get as like a report, like once it's done and comes back, or does it kind of give you like, here's how much we, does it report back on that initial plan that was put into that tablet?
Yeah, that's right. It every single drop that you spray is recorded. So we've got flow meters on board. That's all feeding back. And there's data reports that are filterable, searchable, savable, transferable, all the bulls that you would want.
What else do we need to know?
Can
I ask you about?
The simplest thing people need to know is that people are using drones right now effectively. And we were discussing all this. They are effective at their current payload. There's no need to wait for giant drones. They are already doing thousands of acres per season. People have been doing this for years. So if you just, or if you're having pain points, if you feel like you're paying too much for your spray plane provider, or you were really ticked off because last season it rained and you had a bunch of fungus take out, 10% of your yield, then drones could be a very valuable option for you. So just look into them. If you've been hesitant based on the volume, I would say ignore that and just look into them.
Let me ask you this, just occurred, it's a relatively new, industry or segment of the industry. There's a lot of people getting involved in drones and certainly automation in general. Are we going to be seeing a shakeout are some of those big players saying, Helio, we like what you have to do, but maybe we want to incorporate you into our offerings, that kind of thing? I mean, are you hearing that kind of thing, or are you concerned about all the different competition out there?
So we're talking about like consolidation in general of new industries, right? It's interesting. We've been talking to, of course, a lot of the big players. They are all very interested in drones, but they seem at this point to all be very conservative and afraid of them because you fear what you don't know. And so they have a lot to lose. And we were talking about giant flying machines. They're not aerospace engineers at these companies, at John Deere, Case, et cetera. So I think they're all just waiting to see what happens. So to answer your question, I see consolidation happening, but probably not as soon as you might think. They're going to let us duke it out here in the Wild West for at least a few more years. There's going to be there's going to be little press releases of like people claiming that they're doing like a drone project, but it's going to be like Amazon where they just laid off 80% of their staff, right? It's just like, you weren't really doing drone delivery. You're just kind of pretending to do it, or it was like a little tax write-off maybe.
Or the experimental area where they did one block of a community or something.
No, I don't see any of these big guys taking the risk of actually trying to roll this out for real. They would let one of us do it and possibly catch all the flack if something goes wrong.
So if somebody wants to learn more about Helio, how do they find out more about you?
You can go to our website. So it's hyl.io or helio.com. There's two domains. That's the best way. Website is very thorough. There's a lot of info on there. You can sit and read about drones for hours. And it's not just like Helio specific information. It's just drone spraying information in general. So even if you're not buying from us, you can still learn a lot. So definitely recommend going to the website just as a learning opportunity.
Yeah. And I asked you this before, but I'll just ask it again, just in case something else occurred to you. Any other thoughts? I mean, what didn't I ask you about? What should growers, retailers, manufacturers of the products that drones carry, what should they know about these products? What should they know about drones?
I'll echo a little bit what I said already. These drones are, you turn away from the drone industry for like 6 months, a year, you turn back, it's much different. And I live and breathe it every single day. From when this company started in 2015 to now, the drones have increased like in quantum leaps in terms of reliability, capabilities. So if you're a larger ag company or just a larger equipment company in general who has been thinking that they need to wait 5 years before this develops, that's not the case. Like these, every 3 months, these drones could do so much more than you would expect them to. It's an extremely fast development curve in this industry right now. So don't wait. Yeah, again, like what I said earlier, don't wait to look into it at least.
Arthur Erickson, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate the insights on drones and how they're going to change the future of agriculture, certainly crop inputs specifically.
Appreciate your time as well. It was very nice to chat with you. And let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you for your time and insights today, Arthur. And thank you to our audience for listening. Please join us next time when we talk with Greg Malikoff, Associate Director of Business Development with Iridium Communications, which manages a fleet of satellites and communication devices that help the industry stay connected.